Vanessa Lee is the founder of The Things We Do, a top injector, and a trusted authority in the world of beauty and skincare. Now, she's hosting a podcast. Join her as she covers all the things we do for beauty, best kept secrets, and weird shit included.
Hi guys, welcome back to The Things We Do. Today I have a super special guest for you. I love her. I mean, I love all my guests, but I really love this gal. Today joining me is Allie Grant.
Hi.
Hi. She owns a company called Be Social PR. And tell us a little bit about your company.
Yeah, so we do kind of a lot of things, but we have two divisions where we work with brands.
Yes.
Mostly beauty brands, helping them market, do events, influencer marketing, social. And then we have a talent management division where we represent digital talent. Mm-hmm. So helping them get brand endorsements, monetize their social media, all the things.
You guys were kind of this, or you really, yeah, spearheaded this entire like focus of agency collaborating with digital influencers all the way back in 2012, right?
Right.
So yeah. She's a pioneer, you guys. We don't mess around, okay? So yeah. Tell us about how you saw the marketing and advertising world, yeah, shifting towards digital platforms and how you really capitalize on that.
Yeah, I had worked, I mean, I started my company so young, I was 23.
Oh my gosh, you're badass.
I know, a child, I want to be 23 again. But so basically at that time, so 2012, I guess,
yes,
I had worked at a traditional PR agency where that's like you're getting editorial, media placement, print, newspaper, mm-hmm, things like that, which mm-hmm was like the hot thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then like Twitter and Facebook started popping mm-hmm up, and a lot of agencies were trying to figure out, okay, what do we do there?
Yeah.
So I moved over to a social agency where we focused solely on Twitter and Facebook mm-hmm with brands. And then we slowly started this blogger outreach program. So we were working with mostly lifestyle fashion brands, mm-hmm, and I was building out lists of these bloggers and sending them product, like, mm-hmm, before this was a thing, and they were so, like, excited to get an email, yeah, about a brand, like, getting gifted, and, like, I mean, times have changed, mm-hmm, obviously, mm-hmm, but that was kind of the start of it. And really what I wanted to do with my company was kind of merge the two. Mm-hmm. I really saw opportunity in influencer marketing, mm-hmm, and I saw that as kind of like the new editorial. And so I did just that. And like we're definitely deep-rooted in influencer marketing, but we do traditional methods too, like events and editorial.
And you were based in San Diego previously, correct?
Yeah, I'm from San Diego, started the company there. I wish I could still be there. I love San Diego.
San Diego is so lovely. I feel like people from San Diego are so normal and nice.
I'm not normal, but yeah. No,
well,
they
I
are.
Mean, you know, there's
they're
a difference.
They're happy.
Yeah, they're happy. Yeah. They're by the water. I feel mm-hmm like they're grounded. And yeah, now you guys are located here in the row,
yes,
in downtown LA.
Yes, which was a big
us.
Yeah, which was a big move. But basically, we were all driving up here all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Influencer, brand, all of that is really in LA or New York. Mm-hmm. And New York was too big of a shift for me.
Right.
So I closed our San Diego office, reopened it here in LA, and mm-hmm yeah, it's great.
How many employees do you have here in LA?
Yeah, we're just under 20 right now.
Oh my God.
I know. It's like at that point where it is really, it's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you're 5, 10, it's like you know everyone, you know,
right,
and then like we're at this point now where I'm like, okay, this yeah is a lot.
Yeah. Did you see so when you started when you were 23, did you have mm-hmm any idea that you wanted to grow your business to this size? Was that always the goal, or did this just happen?
Yeah, not really. I always kind of thought it would be just like this small like consultancy, mm-hmm, and it would just be like me and like two other girls, mm-hmm, and it'd be relaxed and easy. One thing led to another, and it just started growing and scaling, and I had mm-hmm to, like, pick up the pieces and figure it out. It's been probably the most challenging piece of owning a company is, mm-hmm, like, scaling and hiring and managing, because I really had no experience doing it.
So this is something that's really interesting to me, like, scaling and growing a business that's doing really well for an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gone through the process of where you thought you picked out the perfect candidate, and then 3 months later or 6 months later, you're like, ah, how do I deal with this because it's not going to work out? Yes. And then besides that, how do you choose someone that you know is going to be like a team player and someone that sticks? So what's your experience?
It is so hard because I feel like people interview really well and you can say whatever you want to say in an interview. And then you put your references down. It's like those people are obviously like close to you, are going to say nice things. So it's really difficult to figure out if someone is going to be a good fit. But we do like a 30-day check-in, a 90-day check-in, and like during that time, it's like this person really should be shining. This is their like the time that they're going to be their best.
Yeah.
A year and a half from now, they might be burnt out and over it. But if they're like showing signs of that like early on, then that's kind of when I'm like, oh, this might not work, and kind of put them on like a performance improvement plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've had my bad hires. I've had people that, you know, aren't a good fit. And but at the end of the day, a really good lesson too is like it goes both ways. Like we need to be a good like company, good managers, and have a good culture to retain our staff. And that's something I've been really challenged with. I'm not like a natural leader or manager. I'm more of like a doer, creator, like that type of person. So kind of learning to be a better manager has really been like a focus of mine so we can retain good employees and staff.
So you've mentioned before that you suggest for other business owners or entrepreneurs to invest in having a mentor and to really look out for that. Who is your mentor and what kind of advice do you
end up receiving?
You're like, I actually don't have one.
The reason I say that all the time to people is because I did not have one and I feel like it was the biggest misstep. I was like pulling information from family members, friends. Like I just, I didn't have one source of like good information from someone who's done it before. And I wish so badly that I had that. I hired a consultant at one point who I was getting information from, but still that's not the same. I think before you step into anything, like sit down with a mentor, like hear them out, ask the questions, whether that's like through Instagram or in person or whatever, take them to lunch. You're big on that too. But yeah, I don't really have one. I mean, now I feel like literally 2012 versus now, there's so many female founders you can like look up to, and they're so accessible. Whether that was different through like you know, conferences.
I think it was so different, like the climate even like 6 to 10 years ago when, because myself, I also tell people, you know, you really need to find a mentor. And I think it's easier to say than actually do. And it's harder for also people who are mentoring other people to, like, it takes up a lot of time and it's an investment for them as well. But I think it's so important because like you said, that's much more available now. And these like woman to woman connections and entrepreneurs having each other's backs and really growing together, that type of feel and that type of ideal, I think, is so much more accepted now. And before it was like every man for himself and we were just trying to figure it out and we were climbing our way through things. And I really had to, you know, I remember asking questions to women who were in my field or men who were in my field and like really trying to gain a sense of like, how do I navigate these responsibilities? And it, the feeling that I received back was, I have to figure this out on my own, so you should too. And now, you know, it's not like that. It's less mean girl and it's more like when I succeed, you succeed. But I agree. Like I'm growing in my own business. I didn't have a mentor. Now I do, but back then it was a lot harder. Okay, so I want to get into PR because I feel like a lot of people, and myself included, when you and I first started talking, I was like, is PR something that I need? Or I don't even, I feel like PR is like escrow for me. Like, what is it really? Like where?
It's like
the
thing.
It's like the iCloud. Like, I'm not sure like where it is or what it does, but I know that it's important because people talk to me all the time about PR. So tell me for people who have businesses like mine, beauty medical or beauty concentrate, some kind of service or product, why, what does PR do for us and why is it so important in growth?
I think for us, I mean, PR means so many things. Stands for public relations. I feel like that term though now is kind of like archaic. So we kind of segment it into a few different things. So we have editorial, and so that's getting, you know, your information about your service, your product in newspapers, magazines, mm-hmm. .coms, like a Birdie Beauty, or Refinery 29.
And so this is like when a derm, I see like an article on Refinery 29 or like Who, What, Where, and we see some kind of like publication and there's multiple practitioners who have given their advice. This is what we're talking about, right?
Yes. Okay. So you can be pitched to these editors as just that, like mm-hmm. this source of information. Or maybe it's a product roundup and you can get your product featured in that. Or like on a local level, maybe it's your store that's in like mm-hmm. LA Magazine. So mm-hmm. there's kind of a handful of different things that you could do. Mm-hmm. But really what you're getting out of that is, you know, new eyes reading about you, mm-hmm. awareness, credibility, mm-hmm. I think is a really big thing, especially in the service industry, beauty mm-hmm. service industry. If you can say you were in Allure or a local magazine, right. I feel like your consumers or customers would really like that. Mm-hmm. That's something you could put in your shop. There's also beauty awards that you can win.
Ooh.
Especially on like the product level, more on a national level. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, how we really approach PR too is really the influencer piece of it as well. Mm-hmm. So getting influencers your product, getting them to talk about you, getting them to come into your shop. Mm-hmm. But also on top of that, it's, you know, what is your message and like what are you all about and making sure that's super fine-tuned. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I feel like yours is really, really strong. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. And you were explaining it to me on my podcast. Mm-hmm. But I think that's step one for your, like, communications plan is, like, what is your story? What's your why? What's interesting about you? And then taking that information and, like, going to, you know, pitch it or having influencers come in and talk about it.
So walk me through a pitch. When I work with a PR company or when mm-hmm. someone reaches out to a PR company, when you work on a specific publication or editorial, how does that work?
Yeah, so basically there's, well, editorials change quite a bit. A lot of magazines are folding. They're mm-hmm. all turning digital.
Some of the biggest ones, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, so it all has changed, and it makes the amount of people you can actually pitch in the space like mm-hmm. so much more limited because mm-hmm. a lot of editors are gone now. But it's, you know, it starts with coming up with, like, what is this concept? What is our pitch? What is our storyline? And then essentially pitching that out to the editor in hopes that they find it interesting and want to cover it or do a story or whatnot. And from there, it's kind of back and forth, like, email communication usually, getting the product in their hands and then really following up. It's like pretty aggressive process.
Yeah.
Because think about all the people who are pitching these limited number of editors. It's mm-hmm. like their inboxes are probably crazy. I mean, and like rewind like, you know, 5-6 years ago, you were like calling these people and now you like no one would ever pick up a phone. Yeah. You know, it's all done yeah. through email. But if you don't have, you know, a PR firm or a publicist, mm-hmm. you can easily find these people's email addresses and mm-hmm. send them a pitch about your company and who you are.
So that's really the difference between working on your own and working with a PR company. Like, if you don't have a PR company, you can find these people's emails and yeah. DM them and all of that and hope it sticks.
Yeah.
Or you can also work with a PR company mm-hmm. who has more clout and who has, like, a name in the industry, the relationships, and know that something's going to come to fruition from it.
Right, right.
Cool. I have a question for you. Yes. I've worked with influencers in the past in mm-hmm. the sense that, like, we've done a treatment for someone who has, say, like, around 500,000 followers, mm-hmm. and they do a post, and we might get one call in from their post.
Okay.
And then we have someone who comes in and has maybe the same amount of followers, mm-hmm. and they post something, and it just, it hits. And dozens and dozens of calls come in from their posts mm-hmm. when really it's the same type of content. Mm-hmm. And I guess relatively their content as far as like lifestyle is pretty much the same. Like, why does one pick up so much more than the other?
A few factors. I mean, first off, people are buying followers. So I would be like really careful about like who you're bringing in. And I would ask to see some of their analytics, look at their engagement, just make sure it's legit.
Wow.
Yeah. Because if you're getting one call from someone who has 500,000 followers, that's pretty alarming.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing. Also, just some influencers have just crazy engagement and they have like serious fans. And I think it kind of is based on, like, what type of content they're putting out. Mm-hmm. For someone who has, like, a business like yours, mm-hmm. you probably want to find someone who shares beauty tips and tricks and, like, that's kind of part of their natural content versus mm-hmm. like outfit of the day or things like that that aren't as relevant to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we see that all the time. It's like across the board in terms of who like converts and who doesn't.
So interesting. Yeah. Because it's like, it's like a science in itself, you right. know, really trying to figure out what your niche is and who really responds. Like I've had someone once with maybe like a million mm-hmm. followers come in and post something, and I'm thinking, wow, I mean, this person has a million eyes on them. Let's see what happens from yeah. that. And it was a significant amount of people who actually called in for a procedure, but it wasn't what I thought a million eyes were going to bring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have someone who like has 50,000 followers mm-hmm. and they're constantly talking about skin itself
yeah.
and all of their followers are focused on that specifically. And yeah. then, you know, like so much more comes from that.
Yeah.
So,
and also if you have like a spa or salon, like you yes. have to look at where this influencer's followers are.
Yeah.
You know, like a million of them could be in New York and that's not going to help your business. So right. I would look at location, analytics, demographics, all that stuff.
Interesting. This is why it's important to work with VR. Okay, so tell me, what do you feel? Things right now I feel like are shifting again because of the magazines dropping really yeah. and everything's going so much towards digital. So what do you think is in the future for PR companies and working with beauty brands? Like what is the direction that things are going moving towards?
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of brands are shifting their dollars to influencer marketing. So that's like paid influencer campaigns, mm-hmm. ambassador programs. Mm-hmm. We work with a company called T3. They are a hair tool company. Mm-hmm. And so we build out their entire ambassador program. Mm-hmm. So we have 20 plus girls who are year-long ambassadors for the brand.
Wow.
We do retreats and events with them. I think we're actually like starting to take things off of online and going to in real life, which is kind of interesting.
So tell me more about that.
Yeah. So I mean like Sephora, for example, doing mm-hmm. Sephoria. And then that's what brands are asking us for is like, we want to do these experiences, these events,
yes.
bring our consumers like to us so they can discover the product and brand in person mm-hmm. and touch it and feel it. So I think that's kind of where we're seeing a lot of things going. Mm-hmm. Podcasts are really interesting, mm-hmm. especially on the editorial end. Like we're definitely getting like female founders mm-hmm. and founders of beauty brands on other people's podcasts. Mm-hmm. That's like a big priority right now. But yeah, I think paid influencer campaigns, events, experiences, podcasts, more digital focused outlets.
So interesting.
But yeah, it's always changing. I mean, it's.
Yeah, it is always changing. Yeah. And I feel like you have to really watch what's going on, right? With like trends and different types of like advertising and what's picking up and what's not picking up. Because
right.
now I feel like a lot of medical offices like mine or even though we're not medical feeling, technically that's what we
yeah.
are, we're trying to, you know, get through this kind of like windy road of like what sticks and what doesn't mm-hmm. stick. And I think they're just starting to realize a lot of offices like mine, like we need to hop on social media. And right now they're just posting different things and they're wondering yeah. why isn't this driving patients in? Mm-hmm. And what do you say to that?
Ugh, I mean, that's hard. Just posting on social media, I
yes.
think, doesn't do much anymore.
Yeah.
I think you really have to put paid money behind your mm-hmm. content on Instagram and Facebook now for it to be valuable. But what I do think an Instagram account does is it can build your brand. Mm-hmm. It really is like your look, your feel, like your essence of like who you mm-hmm. are. And I do think people, instead of going to your website, are going to your Instagram account first.
Yes. Yes.
And so I think having a look and a feel there is extremely important. But I don't think, you know, posting to, say, like 3,000 people about something is going to drive a bunch of, you
right.
know, new business in. So I think it's kind of this, like, 360 approach of, like, you have to have a good social media account and content. Invest mm-hmm. in that. You need to do PR. You need to have in-person events. You need to have some sort of, like, customer loyalty program. You need to do editorial and awards and mm-hmm. influencer marketing. So it's, like, all the things.
This is such a foreign world for me. Like I've always just kind of guessed, like it's like throwing things at a wall and hoping something sticks for me. Mm-hmm. But luckily through advice from Allie and her company and listening to her podcast and really I mean, even Be Social series, when you had that, I feel like even though I was on the panel with the girl, and thank you so much for having me, that touched my heart
so much.
Oh my
God, you were amazing.
When I was on there, I was like, oh my God, I'm learning so much from up here. Yeah. I felt like, should I be sitting in the audience right now? It was so great. So tell me about that. So you were talking about like the experience, you know, more companies are looking into like experiential type of like marketing.
Yeah.
So you guys did Be Social series. Are you guys going to do more of that?
We are. We're going to do another one in January.
I thought it was great. And the feedback from the audience. I know. Amazing.
It was, I like, after that, I was like, oh, that felt so good.
Yeah,
you know, really like all the DMs and things that like went through. Like, it's like all these, you know, young girls trying to start their own like hustle.
Right.
Like, it just felt really good.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's tons of other things out there like that. Like, I love Create and Cultivate. Girl Boss, like, really kills it.
Yes.
But yeah, we're looking to do something in January, more like health, wellness focused.
Amazing.
So, kind of new year, new you thing.
Absolutely.
So, trying to figure out what that looks like exactly. But
okay,
I want to do more of that.
I'm
feel like it was
forward to that.
So rewarding.
Yeah, it was.
You know?
It's great because you can see the instant gratification that happened.
Yeah.
Like, when after the speakers, we were done with like the panel questions.
Yeah.
And then the audience was able to just like chime in. It was tangible. You could feel these women who were right on the cusp of like their ideas and their businesses. And it was like they were, you know, you could feel like the energy. It was like
totally.
Begging for these answers.
Yes,
and like, finally, these women are all sitting right here and we can just like ask them. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
So
you've done stuff like that, or you're
going to?
Or?
Yes.
Okay.
I've done it for practitioners in our field.
Yeah.
I haven't opened it up to the public yet.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, I've spoken on quite a few panels and the feeling from the Be Social series was really different. I felt like, because it was a little bit more intimate, and because there was so, I mean, Kirby Johnson, who we've had on the podcast and who you had moderating, I mean, her questions are so thoughtful.
Yeah,
and
I mean, she kills it. It's like her job.
Kills it every single time. And the people that you had on the panel were very transparent about their stories. It wasn't like, we're here and we did an amazing job and we all make so much money and you can do it too, just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of talk about what numbers they had to work with, and Sharon about, you know, Sharon C. of Uoma Beauty was talking about how when she was getting started, she was so open about like, I quit my job and I was either facing starvation and no money, or I was going to make this company work.
Right.
And like, just that stuff I feel like is great, because having that transparency, other women are like, oh my God, I'm not fucking up completely.
Yeah.
Like, other women did this too.
Yeah.
And we're all just trying to figure it out.
Right.
You know? So that was great. Okay. So I want to ask you about a moment that you've had with a client where you were like, something happened, or there was a breakthrough in you helping them out with their business with PR, and it was like, whoa, we're doing something special here. We're on to things.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I mean, gosh, I feel like there's been a lot of those moments, which is really exciting.
Yeah, because you are where you are now, and
I'm
sure there's a ton of those. Tell
us one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, my dear friend, Annie Lawless, she has a cosmetic company. Yeah, I love her. She's so sweet. We helped her with the launch of her line. And I feel like that was a really fun opportunity for the company and myself, because it was straight from the beginning. She was like a longtime friend of mine. This was such a like new and cool concept. And there was so much momentum and buzz in the beginning that it was like this instant success for her. And now she's in like Sephora nationwide and she's launching new collections and all these things. So I felt like that was a good kind of case study of our ability to really launch a brand.
What did you guys do differently with her, or what was very special about that brand?
Yeah,
that you
I mean,
like
obviously it takes two in this formula, right?
Yeah.
There's only so much we can do if the product, the person, the brand is not so great. So she had all those pieces. She had a successful company previously. She's charismatic. She had great branding. The product was really, really good. So in that case, we were working with a lot, basically. But I think it was just like this 360 approach. I mean, we did influencer, editorial, a launch event. She had great social media. She had a great web team who did a beautiful website. And she also, you know, really worked on her personal social media presence. And that's something that we're really seeing, and something I really focus on. If someone's launching a beauty brand, I say, who's the founder, what is their social content like, what's their story, because that is so important. And so I feel like we did a good job of like really growing her personally and the brand at the same time, so they helped each other. And I think that's, for any brand, beauty or not, I think, you know, if you're a founder of a company, you need to have some sort of social presence and a story and a point of view behind you.
Powerful. That's amazing. Yes. Oprah does that. After her guests say something, she goes, powerful. But I really felt
Who does that?
Was like Oprah.
Oh, my God.
I referenced her like 20 times a day.
You're such an Oprah.
Call me, please. Yeah. Oprah, I know everything about you. Love you. Been subscribing to your magazine since I was like 21.
Oh.
Okay, so tell us where we can find you.
Yeah.
And give us your social, and where can we find out more about Be Social?
Yeah, I'm at Allie Grant on Instagram, and then Be Social is at Be Social Group, and I'm always on Instagram, storying and posting.
You're so good with it.
Really?
Yeah, I watch you throughout your day, and I'm like, man, this girl's on
it. I like doing it. I like creating content. It's fun for me.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
One last thing.
Okay.
We have a segment called the Self-Care Club.
Oh.
And we basically talk about what is one thing that you've been doing in the past week to make sure that you have taken care of yourself. And it could be like a little ritual. It could be something just before bed. But tell us what your self-care moment has been in the past week.
Oh, I think sleep. I feel like sleep is like the key to wellness. So I've been trying to go to bed earlier this week.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Fantastic. What time do you usually go to bed?
Oh, I'm like a night owl.
Same.
Like I could
it's
be
really
up
hard.
Until like 1 a.m.
Okay. And what time have you been going to sleep lately?
Like 10.
So how do you train yourself to just go to sleep at 10 instead?
It's hard. I take those like Ollie melatonin gummies.
Me too, the little purple ones.
Yeah, sometimes they make me like pass out.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they don't work.
So funny story, my husband was like, hey, I got these melatonin gummies. I think we should try it out because we need to focus on resting more.
Yeah.
You know, like we just go until like midnight or 1 a.m. and we knock out. And the next day it's like, ah, oh, you wake up so tired.
Yeah.
So I was like, that stuff doesn't work. It's sold at Target. Like, I need hardcore meds to be able to put me down. I'm, like, so, you know, amped up all the time naturally. And he was like, all right, well, try it. You know, like, just try it. And I was like, all right. And I was like, and to prove it to you, I'm going to take three. So,
oh, my God. You're supposed to take two.
I barely took one. I took three at, like, 7 p.m. By 7:30, my left eye shut. And he was like, are you tired? And I was like, no.
Oh,
but I was,
God.
Like, so tired. Yeah. Ollie gummies really work.
Yes.
So really now, do. Every now and then, if I have trouble or if I know that my mind is racing and I'm going to have a hard time going to sleep,
I
take one of those, just one.
Yeah.
And I'm like good in 30 minutes.
Really
I'm like
help. Like something in them like calms you down.
Yeah, well it's I think lavender and melatonin and Ollie, you should be sponsoring this, by
sponsor,
the way.
Sponsor, please.
But that's wonderful. Okay, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, that was fun and easy.
And thank you. And tell us about your podcast also.
Oh yeah. So we have a podcast. It's launching, third season's launching next week. It's called Follow Me. Vanessa's on it. We interview entrepreneurs.
You guys do such a good job.
Do we?
Yeah, you really do.
You have like this amazing team, so fancy.
No, even when I showed up, I was like, you guys don't even use headphones. What are we? Her
Why
setup
didn't
is
we
like
have
really
headphones
cool.
today. I thought we were going to do headphones.
Well, I told her that you didn't like it. So our show producer, Katrina Hanaira, I was like, no, don't. She
I'm such
like
a
it.
Diva. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Everyone needs to have their setup before you feel good.
Well,
okay, well, thank you
great.
So much.
Thank
I adore you.
You.
I really appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.